This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
Our next guest is Diane Mitchell, who is Festival Director of the Wonderful World of Wellbeing, which is taking place at Kempton Park Racecourse on the 12th and 13th of May. That's a mouthful. Welcome, Diane.
Thank you.
So, before we talk about the festival, just give us a potted version about your career history. What's brought you to this point?
Okay. Well, about 11 years ago, I was given a few weeks to live. And for me, that was a changing point. Everything as I knew it just fell away. I was running my own healing business then, but on a much more sort of fluid scale. And but something happened to me internally at the moment I was given that prognosis, and I later understood it to be my gut brain connecting to my mind brain. And I just decided that end of life was not for me at that point. So through my journey of recouping a new life and piecing a new life back together, I was always intrigued with what actually happened to my mind at that moment, because I was very aware and heightened that this massive shift just took place and a decision was made that I always maintained, and here I am today. So that led me into educational retreats around all sorts of subjects of grief and loss and mindset, mindfulness, and went on to become, although we were living really mindfully, I actually, part of the journey was to be trained in mindfulness, and I kept coming back to mindset. So, and also, how many other people on the planet are actually given prognoses like that and believe it and end up with a negative response?
Have you read a book by Anita Morjani called Dying to Be Me?
Yeah,
that's another similar sort of, obviously hers was, she was literally on a hospital bed having died, and then she came back. Yeah. That's another incredible story. Yeah.
It's a power, you know, the mind, the body connection. It's a powerful thing. When you make decisions, whether it's from typically your mind or at a cellular level, it's a game changer. It really is.
And was there any medical sort of intervention to get you back? Or was it all the power?
No, I did not have any medication whatsoever. I had one operation, not the initial operation they wanted to do. Initially, it was to remove my voice box and all the other disfigurement that had have come with that. But because I changed my mind the night before surgery and decided that operation was not going to happen, I was then moved to another team, and we decided collectively to remove the mass rather than do the initial operation. So, but through that, so I had one operation, didn't have any follow-up with radio or chemo. It was never called on, never needed. But what my journey took place was through holistic therapies, holistic interventions, and counselling was involved initially to support my shift and change. But because I've always been involved and supported training and education, it was just a natural flow for me to want to get out there to help and support other people in mindset techniques. Yeah. And so I was really lucky. I had great people who came into my life, and great people from the retreats who came forward and asked me to be part of the educational program itself, and then they trained me further and developed my skills. And personally, obviously that helped, but then I had my own counselors, and I just continued with holistic therapies. I think the massive shift was actually food. I just moved all processed foods out and grew my own.
I was going to ask you about that, actually, whether diet had a part to play.
I do believe it did. I mean, when you're given 12 weeks to live, there's not much time to sort of get everything in order. But I emptied my life. But what happened after that was it just shifted. So holistic therapies, nutrition, just getting clean, non-chemical based foods, nothing in a packet, nothing that had been sprayed, and cultivated my own land and just grew everything myself. So it was all controlled. And really, really good.
What did the doctor say, the ones that had given you 12 weeks to live?
Well, the one that gave me 12 weeks to live, I actually fired him the night before the surgery, because there was a slight altercation there. And it was the tumour was positioned on my main aorta artery, which was going to be effectively cut open the next morning. And I just realised that he wasn't the person to give me that surgery, so I made that call. So I never saw him again after that. But the other team was fantastic. We collectively came together, and they all voiced, and so did I. And that was the moment in my life, I honestly believe, where I found my voice through through actually being, you know, diagnosed with a cancer that was going to have to remove my voice box.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, was there any point where you thought, actually, am I doing the right thing here? Should I be having chemo? Or
no.
No.
There was only one point of doubt, and that came with the second team. And the agreement was that we would work together and would all make the decisions together rather than one person speaking for everybody, including myself. And I just found that a really suitable way forward. And I really welcomed that because the previous team, there were numbers of people in there, but only one person voicing. And I couldn't sort of make sense of that when you've got a team of highly, they were all fantastic. I had the most amazing care, but the second just suited me, more of a holistic approach. And the agreement was that we would all decide on everything, but they would start at the beginning with the PET scans. So that's, we started at the beginning, which I was fine, because I, you know, still support everything you're saying. I'm looking at the results, I'm hearing it. You know, we've got all the science behind everything, yeah. But something happened internally that just kept me in that place of deciding I will one day, but just sure. Not now. And so when they did the first PET scan, they actually called me back the day after, and that was the only other time where I thought, oh, I got this wrong. But we were about 9 or 10 weeks into it then. And I thought they were calling me to say, look, you know, this is it, a couple of weeks. And it wasn't. They were just bringing me the same results, but with a slightly different take on it, because they could voice what they were seeing. And with that, then we decided to remove the mass rather than remove the voice box. And but it was only at that point when they wanted me in within 24 hours. I just thought, oh, have I got this wrong? So I just went in and questioned, and I just kept thinking no, but then the book came. But luckily they wanted me in the next morning, so I didn't have long time to sit and ruminate in my mind.
Yeah.
But that was the only time that came back in, and I was fortunate.
Do you think that hopefully nowadays there's more doctors out there that do take a more holistic approach, or do you think that it's like almost like a lottery as to whether you get a team that are going to be, because obviously you were lucky enough to have that behind you, but some people might not be so lucky. It might be someone that's not into anything like that, won't understand it, won't entertain it, and then what do you do?
Yeah, well, I think everyone's different. I mean, my quest, which is what's led me to the umbrella of the festival as well, which I'll share in a few moments, but my quest is just to never be frightened to voice, never be frightened to speak up. I mean, I was 41 years old when that came about in my life, and prior to that I've never had a problem speaking to people. I've always classed myself as sort of being assertive and manageable and, you know, open to discussions. But on a personal scale, when everything is on the line, I can honestly say, looking back on reflection, I didn't have a voice. I'd always been in business and worked my business life for many years, but on a personal scale, it was there was something missing, and it was about me being heard with what was right for me. So I think, to answer your question, I think we've got amazing medics out there, amazing teams, and they're dealing with human beings they've never met before, and human beings like myself are dealing with total strangers who, you know, and one of the pieces of advice I was given by someone was just communicate with the medics and take control of your own health. Don't hand it over. So I think that was something that I actually did at the beginning. I said, you can do it. I agreed to the operation. I agreed to everything they wanted to do, but I still believed that I was going to continue living. Mm. And that's what caused the conflict, because I couldn't accept that I was going to die. Mm. But in retrospect, it wasn't a good thing to do, hand over that responsibility. Yeah. And so the second time round, I didn't. I was given a choice to collectively work together, and that's what I worked with, and really thankful for that opportunity.
It's amazing. I mean, you know, so fortunate to have that team, because I hear so many cases of, you know, hospitals just treating the patient as another patient, another number. You know, this is what we do to get this person from A to B. Whereas obviously you were able to find your voice, and you had a responsive sort of team that were willing to work with you.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think to a degree as well that the medics have to They've got systems to follow. There's so many people needing support and help. People have to be in a system and go through the system. And I was in that system and went through that system. However, we hit a point where there was a conflict between the surgeon and myself because I wasn't accepting that I was going to die. And it was too conflicting for where the operation was going to take place. And he'd connected with my psyche, and I didn't understand that at that point. He connected with my frustration, what were playing out in anger with him, because they couldn't change my mind. And although I wasn't decrying any of the work, and even the psychologists that put me into their teams to undergo acceptance and commitment therapy, brilliant, brilliant work, but I couldn't believe in something I don't believe in, so they couldn't change my mind, and it became a conflict for the head surgeon, and I just couldn't negate on my territory for that. I couldn't sell my belief
was
to someone
else. You stood by your beliefs, because that's testament to you. That's why you're here today, and that's fantastic, isn't it?
It is. I honestly don't believe I would be here today, and definitely wouldn't be here speaking to you.
Fantastic. And so let's talk about the wonderful world of Wellbeing Festival. How did all that sort of come about, and how is this the first year or
no it's not? Well, the Wonderful World of Wellbeing Festival was a part of the journey. So I work in mindset on a one-to-one basis now, where we rewrite the software of the mind in a couple of hours, and as this is consistently changing people's lives and through my journey, I couldn't help but coming back to the fact that I'm sat with one person, working with one person, and as effective as that is, it's not enough. And I quite like bringing people together. And I'd run festivals before, organised events, I run retreats. So bringing people together and organising things was a natural part of what I do. But I just kept thinking, how about, you know, my journey was all holistic. There was not one chemical involved. And there was, and that wasn't a stringent decision. It was just the way that I flowed into it. My whole intuition just took me into that. And when I sort of came out the other side, I realised there was no chemical intervention, no drugs involved. One operation, it was probably a major, but it wasn't as major as it should have been. And no follow-up chemo or radio now. So, and I am quite fit and healthy. So I think if we can get this out with expert leaders in well-being, just to educate on a broader scale, it's a lot more than I can offer on a one-to-one basis. And I can provide that platform and do provide that platform for that. So with that, I handpick everybody who comes in to exhibit with us, and they have to be at the top of their game, to be passionate, to reach out and connect with people at levels they may not even know themselves. So the first festival was launched in Yorkshire last year in March, and we had massive success with it. And it was two-day festival, so I ran three throughout the year, three two-day festivals primarily targeted at adults. But being a mindfulness practitioner and working with adults, which is what I do, wherever there's an adult needing support and they're part of a family, you'd know intrinsically it goes right the way down the family and everybody needs support. So I always recommend the inclusion of the holistic approach to the family. But also with that, on the festival scale, there's no festival specifically for children's well-being, and not until now, not until my festival. So, and it's easier as an adult to maintain your own status quo and trying to survive yourself and move forward. And it's not always able to filter that, whether it's through cost or thinking or knowledge or even the time. Everybody is so busy today, and lots of parents have to maintain multiple jobs to give the families the best they possibly can. So having to then source all the well-being experts or the choices and opportunities could just go on forever, and they could lose the point, and then the needs that they had in the first instance could possibly change. So for me, I decided to put the Wonderful World of Wellbeing Festival for kids. So we launched that as a pilot scheme in Leeds, in North Leeds last year, and we had tremendous success. So it was all specialists for wellbeing specialists for children, and then we had sand play, and we set up mindful sensory areas. So for Kempton Park, which is our next festival and the first time that we've brought this to London, I've fused the two together.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we have probably 85% of it is for adults, but I'm bringing facets of the children's festival here.
Because it's free for under 14s, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And all the workshops are free. So in terms of the children experience, I'm bringing the mindfulness sensory areas. So there'll be, it's just a point of being able to express how easy you can introduce mindfulness or become aware that things they're doing at home anyway are mindful, and encouraging them to take that back into the home and finding a small place for it.
They should do it in school, 100%. I know they say they haven't got time because the curriculum, and it is really hard, but it's almost like by introducing it, everything would get easier anyway, so it would pay off in the end.
It would, yeah. I mean, it is starting to filter through to some of the schools now, but mindfulness is a game changer. It really, truly,
especially with
is.
All the issues with anxiety, yeah. And all the issues with kids in school at the moment, it's a big thing.
It backs that social media pressure,
yeah,
isn't it?
Such a big
they're
thing.
They're under so much pressure.
That's from right.
At a very early age.
Yeah, and I think as well, I mean, we're so fortunate we've got the World Wide Web. You know, I mean, here we are on it today, aren't we?
Yeah.
With this interview. But what it creates is social isolation. And that ineffectively starts to separate the mind from feelings and emotions. Yeah. And then before you know it, they've spent heaps and heaps of time on their own, and this disengagement possibilities and all sorts of ramifications around it.
As a starting point, would you say that, as a gentle introduction, if someone wants to get into mindfulness or start the meditation practice, etc., that just 10 minutes a day can make a big difference if you do it every single day?
Well, the World Health Organization actually promote 10 minutes a day. That's what their recommendation is. And it's enough for the mind to take in. When I'm teaching meditation and mindfulness, the meditations I start with are 1 minute, and we build up to 10 minutes because the mind is too full and it's just too busy to fit anything else in. So introducing it in short spurts is perfect.
Right, yeah. Well, sadly, Diane, we've come to the end of the show. And again, we could talk to you all day just on this topic. It's a fascinating topic. If there's one bit of advice you could offer the listeners that you think might help them around any of the holistic therapies that are going to be around at the festival, what would it be? Would it be the mindfulness thing? Would it be to take a chance and try something different? What would you suggest?
Well, the festival covers all aspects of well-being. So we've got live classes with yoga, Pilates, workshops, mindful movement. Come and try a live class. We've got Speaker's Corner, which is all educational talks on health and well-being and all different aspects of that, all free. Then we've got the main well-being arena with over 65 local businesses from around the region, all experts in well-being. So have a look at the website. Go to the Wonderful World of Wellbeing website. The exhibitors are on there. The classes are listed on there. And all the classes are free with your entry ticket as well.
Do you have to pre-book any of those classes?
Yes. Yeah, we advise that you book online because it's numbers. So just to make sure that you get in.
Yeah.
Just all the tickets are online and you can book them for free with your paid entry ticket.
So it's www.wonderfulworldofwellbeing.com?
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
And it's on the weekend of the 12th and 13th of May.
Fantastic.
At Kempton Park.
Thank you.
I might go along. It looks good,
I'll
actually.
Come with you.
Yeah.
They come in.
I might well do. Yeah, I might well do. It looked good. I was looking at it earlier.
Fabulous.
Definitely.
I'll be your plus one. Okay, thank you, Diane. So that was Diane Mitchell from wonderfulworldofwellbeing.com.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk, or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.